Our Vino Lingo segment has grown tremendously over the last 14 years. So it's time once again to offer a podcast that is a snapshot of many of these interesting and unusual wine terms. Due to the limitations of travel over the last 2 years, some definitions are in person and others are by phone. The winemakers featured range from Napa Valley, Arizona, Virginia, Paso Robles, Oregon, and many other regions. So sip a glass and crack a grin as we present Vino Lingo 2022 so far.
All right, my name is Corey Turnbull. I'm the winemaker and owner of Burning Tree Cellars. My wine lingo term is going to be garf or garfy. There's certain buckets or there's certain tubs or things around the winery we label as such. And that basically means no good fruit, no good wine can touch those buckets. It's mostly for the garfy fruit, which stands for gross-ass rotten fruit. Not that we get rotten fruit in, but sometimes things hit the floor and so on and so forth. But anyway, we always use the term garf. Go grab a garf bucket. That's my term.
My name is Ron Brumley, and I'm with Alcantara Vineyard and Winery in Arizona. We're the Verde Valley AVA, and my wine word is a phrase, and we call it Pinot and popcorn. And since we do everything by hand here, literally, we process about 65 tons a year. When you do things by hand, you want people to take time and taste it. Maybe, you look at the wine and you swirl the wine and you swish the wine and you savor the wine after you've swallowed it. And we'd really like people not to gulp. And this is where Pinot and popcorn comes in, is you go and you bust your butt making the wine, and the bachelorette party comes walking in, and they just gulp. So we call those girls the Pinot and popcorn. It's something you do after work. You just grab a glass of wine and you throw it back, and it's more about getting rid of the day versus enjoying the artistry behind making wine. And so it's kind of a catchphrase in the cellar is, we're doing this for the enophiles, the people who really like the wine. But when somebody comes through and just throws it back and it's gone in 2 seconds, we call those people the Pinot and popcorn. So a glass of Pinot Noir and a bag of microwave popcorn in the evening, we got to cater to those guys too.
Hi, Tom Gamble at Gamble Family Vineyards. Vino Lingo, Umbulo Blanc. That is the North American Vitis vinifera hybrid that's resistant to Pierce disease that I have planted as an experiment.
Hi, I'm Linda Neal from Tierra Roja, and this is my Vino Lingo moment. And I would say that one word that most consumers just kind of go, huh? And don't understand is suckering. So out in the vineyard, one of our most important and time-consuming activities in the springtime is suckering. And well, what is that? So we are removing unwanted growth. So let's say, for example, we have the trunk coming up from the ground and it spreads out into a cordon typically. And all the way from the ground up the trunk and along that cordon, we have huge quantities of unwanted growth. When we prune in the wintertime, we are pruning the canes that were green last year. Those are the canes that have fruit. The buds on those, they lignify, which is they turn dormant. And in the wintertime, we'll clip them back to where there's one or two buds for each of these spurs, right? So I guess there's a whole bunch of lingo. But at each one of these growing points, we have a bud that's going to emerge into a new green shoot, and that's where the fruit will be. But all this old wood is covered with an explosion of other green shoots that are not fruitful. And we want to eliminate most of those. Sometimes we need to leave one just for a replacement. Let's say we've had a dieback or a broken spur. But removing all of this unwanted green growth, we're removing suckers, so we are suckering.
I'm Ken Nerlove. I'm a grape grower in the Napa Valley. I've been growing grapes in the valley for almost 40 years. We're a Pinot Noir producer. My Vino lingo is this. it is what it is. And let me expound upon that. So when I started growing grapes as a young man 40 years ago, and we would have conditions in the vineyard that were concerning or upsetting to me, I started to stress about it. And then a few years into the situation, I came to my senses and said, Ken, you can't stress about something you can't change, and especially you can't change the weather. And when you're growing grapes, the weather controls. It rules the whole thing. And I finally just caved in, and I said, it is what it is. And when I adopted that philosophy and started growing grapes, my life got a lot better. My stress level went down because there's nothing I can do to control the weather. And as long as I adopted the philosophy, it is what it is, and it is what it is, my day went perfect. So if you're asking me what my vino lingo is for an old grape grower in the Napa Valley that's been around for a number of years growing grapes, you can't control what you can't control. It is what it is.
Hi there. I'm Tammy McKay from Wind Vineyards, and my vino lingo for the day is wonky. Wonky is a house term that we use, and it describes anything that is less than desirable in a wine. At Windsor Vineyards, we make quite a few wines, and with the parent company as well, we've got over 7 million gallons and 3 winemakers, 4 bottling lines. So really, it's a very, very busy place with a lot of wine to keep our eye on. And things can and do go wrong with wines, despite our best efforts. So what would be wonky? Well, it could be wine faults like high VA or hydrogen sulfide, Brett, ethyl acetate, or wine that's become oxidized, or wine that's just not great. Maybe it's linear or not balanced, overly tannic or astringent, acidic or flabby. So in communicating with each other between the winemakers, we may say, this tank or that blend is wonky. And it's immediate understanding that the wine needs attention. So you can tell the degree of wonkiness by how it's said. Like you might say, yeah, that wine's kind of wonky, or, oh, that wine is wonky. So we'll taste and analyze the wines and figure out what's up with them and try to take the best care we can to bring it back to its brilliance.
My name is Ben Jordan. I'm the winemaker at Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. And the phrase I'd like to propose is progress past nostalgia, and that just being a kind of guiding philosophy of, you know, really what we do in Virginia, but especially here at Early Mountain, and that is to not look at the past other than to, you know, you can be inspired by what folks have done and are doing, but to really understand that this is a region, we are a place that should be progressing and not just trying to improve, but really looking at what our future is. And that is not necessarily something you see in the world of wine, because wine can be very nostalgic and very caught up in the past. And I think that here in Virginia and what we're trying to go for at Early Mountain is really important, that we're looking for every year to keep progressing and improving upon ourselves and taking both ourselves and the region to a better place.
My name is Daniel Dow, and my favorite words that I like to use are vine balance, because I believe that the greatest wines in the world are made in the vineyards. They're not in the winery. Vine balance, what is it? It is basically the ability to understand the ratio of clusters of grapes compared to the canopy that is present on the vines in order to achieve perfect ripeness without having to average flavors. So it's easy to have a lack of vine balance in the vineyard, and that causes the winemaker to want to average flavors. And then adulteration starts, adding sugars, adding gelatins, fining agents, all these things to make up for what the terroir has not given. So it's very important to have vine balance, because once vine balance is established, my job as a winemaker is a lot easier. I get grapes that are perfectly ripened, that are not averaging flavors, and allowing me to make the best wine possible.
I'm Drew Nienow with Onyx Wines in Paso Robles, California, and my vino lingo word is cluster shaping. And cluster shaping, as the name would imply, is out of the vineyard in an operation that we do in the grape growing side of winemaking. And I think a lot of people are familiar with crop adjustments, and sometimes the grapevines will put out more crop than is ideal for the winemaking process. So you tend to go through the vineyard and snip off clusters to reduce the weight of the fruit on the vine in order to increase the quality of the end product. But in some cases, with grapes like Grenache and Petite Syrah, there are what are called shoulders on the clusters. So rather than having a perfectly conical shape to the grape cluster, they will have almost extended clusters attached to the same rachis. So a cluster shaping is the process of going through and relieving the weight on the vine, not by dropping entire clusters off of the vine, but by just snipping off the shoulders and those extended parts of the cluster. So you can drop the size and the weight of each cluster by 50% as opposed to chopping off every single vine. And there's a few different benefits of that, as I said, reducing the weight on the vine and increasing the quality. But you can also get more even amount of sunlight on the clusters of the grapes because those shoulders may shade the greater part of the cluster. So you get a better development of the skins and the seeds of the grapes as the season progresses on. And it's also a mildew and a mold. If you get a lot of wet precipitation and mildew and mold become more of an issue, if you've gone through and reduced the weight on each cluster, you're less likely to see any sort of prevalence of that mildew or mold on the grapes.
Hi, Eugenia Keegan here. I am the general manager for Oregon for Jackson Family Wines. And my wine word is malolactic fermentation. It's a big word. It sounds scientific. It sounds overwhelming, sounds confusing, and it's the simplest thing of all. It is a very, very innocent bacterial exchange that changes malic acid to lactic acid. So what does that mean? It means the acid of a green apple, like a Granny Smith, to the mouth-coating sensation of buttermilk. Very, very easy to understand in your mouth as soon as you understand it in your mind. That's my Vino Lingo for today.
My name is Greg Stock. I'm the winemaker here at Landmark Vineyards in Sonoma County, California. And people are always intimidated by wine tasting, and I've never really understood why, because when we try wines every month, try every lot every month. This year we have 44 lots. But going through Chardonnay, I always use, and then my guys will develop terms like hot dog water to describe a wine that is a little bit smoky and showing a little too much oak. We also say pasta water. And if you can imagine what that smells like, sort of an indefinable grain smell. Cream of wheat is another word that I use quite a bit. And for wines that are a little reduced, we use chicken stock. And all of those are very relatable terms because I think the language of wine is very difficult. So if you can put what you're smelling in everyday language, it really helps other people understand what you're trying to communicate in wine. So no reason to make up fancy words.
My name is Steven Cruzan. I'm the winemaker for Titus Vineyards here in Santa Elena, California. And my Vino Lingo word is goo factor. This is an intrinsic quality, texture, profile, emotion that is at the heart of every one of our very favorite wines that makes up typically our reserve Cabernet. It's that quality where the wine sits on your palate. It has breadth, it has depth, it has a structure, but it's not overbearing, and it just feels gooey on the palate. So that's the goo factor.
Hello there, Henrik Paulsen from Release Winery, Napa Valley. My Vino Lingo word is bleed or saigner. And to explain that word, is that when you are getting your grapes in and you are starting fermentation, you want to bleed off a little bit of juice so you actually increase the amount of skin and juice ratio. So by bleeding off, you concentrate your color in the wine, and that is the saignée or the bleed.
Hello, my name is Jean Figuier. I make wine for a living. Not really good wines, but I try to make wine for a living, and I'm useless. What else do you want to know, Ray?
Vino lingo, sir.
Al dente. So, a week ago, somebody looked at me and says, Jean, it is really easy to make wine that is overripe. I said, yes. But grapes are like pasta. They have to be picked al dente. And I listened, and I paused, and asked myself, I said, why? Because you want to pick them after they're green, but when you still have the soul of the fruit. And when you think about a the perfect pasta, al dente is where you can still aromatically taste the paste, but it's not raw. And that really resonated.
Hi, I'm Jenna Davis. I'm an associate winemaker at Dumont, and my vino lingo word is high density. So high density is in reference to how tightly planted the vines are in a vineyard. So there's kind of typical vineyard spacing so that farm equipment can fit down the rows. And normally a vineyard's planted maybe 1,300 vines per acre. But at our estate vineyard, we have one of the highest density plantings in Northern California. So we actually have 3,600 vines per acre. So the vines are really nice and close. And that does a couple things. It makes our roots go nice and deep, and we get some canopy shading on the fruit and on the soils. And I especially like the high density planting in this day and age because I think it really reflects the success that can be gained from collaboration. You kind of think traditionally with, you know, Darwin and competition between vines that high-density planting would be worse off. The vines would be weak and they'd be struggling because they're competing, but we've actually seen the opposite. During challenging vintages, these vines are extremely healthy and balanced, and I think it's the roots going deep and the interconnectedness of the vines and the cool soils and the healthy microbes. So I like it because it shows the success of collaboration versus competition, and I think it's fitting in this day and age. So high density.
Hi, so my name's Julie Cooper. I'm an associate winemaker at Dumont Winery, and I'm going to say my word is longevity. And I think that's really pertinent to Dumont. Dumont's been a brand since 1996, and we've been sourcing with some of the same vineyards since we started. So there's longevity in our relationship with the vineyards. And our crew has been working together for accumulated 50 years of winemaking experience. So there's lots of longevity in the experience that we have working with these grapes and creating wines that we're really proud of. And I think just circling back to the vineyards, like I said, we've been using some of the same as the vineyard sources from the very beginning. And almost all the other vineyard sources that we source from, we've planted or we've worked from since they've been planted. And it's just a really exciting thing to do. And I think over the years, the relationship that you create with the vines, your knowledge of the vines, it's very intimate. And that's been the key to our success as winemakers, our success in making wines that we think are really beautiful and that we're very proud to present. So that's my word, longevity.
G'day, Nick Goldschmidt here. I'm a winemaker here in Alexander Valley and Oakville and Russian River. And my term today is dimers and trimers. So the I learned a little bit about this with when I was consulting for a new technology in South Africa, believe it or not. I'm not from South Africa, I'm from New Zealand, don't get me confused. We are the home of rugby, the All Blacks. And the tricky thing is when you drink a young red wine, you always get like this tannin feel, this dryness, and people say, oh man, you got to lay this wine down for 15, 20 years and it'll come around. No! Look, what we need to do is change the shape of that tannin. All right, how do we do that? So if you remember back to your chemistry lesson, there's a thing called a dimer. Okay, let's pretend this is a tannin molecule. It's a dimer. Well, remember what the mirror image is? It's called a trimer. So if 80% of your wine is in the dimer form and you tilt your head back and all that tannin goes, man, that's dry. Now, if I can convert some of that 80% into the mirror image, the trimer, okay, I'm actually going to make the wine taste softer and sweeter, and yet the tannin volume measurable is going to be the same, but the shape of the tannin is going to be different. So by changing the shape of the tannin, I can make the wine sweeter and rounder and taste more fruity and soft even when the wine is young. Anyway, that's my term, dimers and trimers. Get out there and celebrate with a glass of red wine.
Hi, I'm Katarina Axelson. I'm the CEO and founder of Tastry, and my Vino Lingo word is CompuBlend, which is a word that we actually came up with. It's short for computational blending, which is essentially AI-assisted product formulation. So what CompuBlend is it's a method to look at the chemistry of a wine and run multiple permutations of possible formulations for a final blend.
Hi there, my name's Keith Emerson, winemaker for Vinoce here in Napa Valley, and my word is zippy. I use this word a lot when describing white and pink wines, and a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy, but what I mean is refreshing, zesty. I think of sometimes lime comes to mind, or lime zest, I should say. Freshness, verve, nerve, acid. You know, those are all words that kind of all come together. And for me, it all zippy kind of sums it all up. So that's my word, zippy.
So this is TJ Rogers. I'm a co-owner of Claude La Tech in California. It's a high-end Pinot Noir vineyard. Old-fashioned wines, the Burgundian-style Pinot Noirs. And my Vino lingo is sweet tannin. It's a term we use all the time. It sounds like a misnomer, but the sweetness is not sugar sweet. The sweetness is kind of a richness that you find in the best Burgundies, where the tannin actually produces this mouth-filling, rich, long-lasting flavor. One of the Romane Conti wines is called Richebourg, and that Rich is rich, and that refers to the same sweet tannin. And this is what happens to Burgundy after 10 years after the tannin bite dies away and the tannin reacts in the bottle and turns into sweet tannin. And to me, it's the kind of the hallmark flavor of a great Pinot Noir.
Hi there, my name is Julian Gervreau. I'm the Vice President of Sustainability for Jackson Family Wines. And my Vino lingo word is snapdragon. And the reason I chose that word is because early in my wine career, I was in a tasting group with a lot of very vaunted individuals who knew a lot more about wine and tasting wine and critiquing wine than I will ever hope to know. And we were in a tasting session one day when a gentleman next to me described the aromas of a Bordeaux blend to be indicative or representative of snapdragons. And I remember in that moment that I just kind of had to pick my jaw up off the floor. I looked at this guy. First of all, I had never smelled a snapdragon, so I had no idea what in the heck a snapdragon smelled like or what the aroma profile was. But I just remember in that moment being so mystified by, you know, the wine process and the tasting and the sensory process, and just thinking to myself, why can't people just enjoy wine for what it is? Like, do we need to be able to smell snapdragons in the wine that we taste, or can we just enjoy it for the beautiful alchemy that it is? So that brings me to snapdragon, and hope everybody enjoys a nice glass of wine without getting too deep into it.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Geisha. Our intern is Clement Maddox. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.